Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Nall. Always a pleasure to be able to share a positive insight on how we can live a longer and healthier and happier life. Today, we begin with a study from Goethe University in Germany, and it talks about how olives can help guard against dementia. If we're really able to wrap our mind around it, and realize when you look at all your old photo albums from high school, college, afterwards, getting your family, getting into your career, office, friends, personal friends, the different adventures you've taken, the trips you've taken, begin to realize, wow, these are all passages, transitions. Some we stay in longer than others. But they all have something in common. They show us the value of our choices. When we're happy, we see it. We see it in our eyes, our face, the relaxing of our body. When we're tense, when we're stressed, we see it also. How many times have your mother or someone in your family said, "What's wrong?" You said, "Nothing." "No, what's wrong?" And then something was wrong. How do they know? There is a harmonizing maternal sense. Every mother has it. It's hardwired. They know when we're happy and they know when we're not. But frequently, we try to maintain a sense of calm whenever possible. And let's hope we have a lot of calm moments, but we often today don't. So we look back and we think, wow, those were easier times. They still had their problems and challenges. Every transition brings with it a new door that we have to open. We're no longer a teenager. We're no longer in college. We have to grow up. We have to be more mature. I'm a father. I'm a mother. I have to take care of my children. That changes my whole outlook on what I have to do, what my priorities are. And indeed, part of how we mature is knowing which of our responsibilities we should focus upon without losing ourselves in the process. But one day we take a look and maybe we're 40, which is past middle age. Based upon the newest science, about 36 is the new middle age. 36. Wow. You mean everything is downhill from there? Doesn't have to be. But for most people, it is. By the age of 40, we start seeing the physical signs, the hair thinning, the wrinkles, the loss of muscle mass, the loss of energy, pains we never had before. And so all this means that we're heading towards a place that historically we never had a problem with, and that was dementia and Alzheimer's. Why? Why do we have more dementia and Alzheimer's today than we did when we were growing up? Or maybe we had it, we just weren't aware of it. We knew that people had memory loss, yes, but not what we're seeing today. In part, that's because people are living longer than they did when we were growing up. But I remember, I'm sure you do too, there were people in their 80s, even 90s growing up, and none of the people I knew who were older had dementia or Alzheimer's. But today it is an epidemic, and it's only going to get worse, because all of us who were baby boomers and the X generation, we're the next people going into dementia. And that's a scary thought. So the question is, what can we do to slow it down, even reverse it or prevent it? And that's where the good science shows us we don't have to go through dementia. We can prevent it. If we have it, we can improve our condition substantially. We've done it. I did the first clinical trial 16 months to show that everyone in that study had medically confirmed brain problems, dementia, Alzheimer's, ALS, Parkinson's, multiple sclerosis, etc. In 16 months, we had a 93% recovery rate, meaning we just didn't improve, they recovered completely. So we know it can be done, but is the average American willing to give that kind of discipline and focus at this point in their life? Because remember, when you're young, there's no mountain you're not willing to try to climb. But when you get older, you feel like Sisyphus, pushing that boulder up, but it comes back down. You never get to the top. And then one day you just think, I was thinking about this morning, how many gardens I planted with fruit trees, taking 6 to 10 years before those fruit trees fully mature. But you think, I got time. I got plenty of time. Or how many times have you thought, well, why should I buy a new house now? At my age, why should I plant a tree? Why be alive when the tree bears fruit? These are the thoughts that go through your mind. Not everyone, but most of us. So I'm now telling you, we can do a lot to slow down and reverse the aging process. We've done it. We've proven it can be done. So anyhow, just one little example. How about this for simplicity? The Mediterranean diet is one of the healthiest diets in the world. It's not perfect. It's not a raw vegan diet. That would be perfection. But it's awful close. And it's been heralded as a boon to health as an effective protection against a variety of conditions, including dementia. A brand new study looks at the ability of a very specific part of the diet, the olive, to protect against neurological symptoms like memory loss. As percentage of the Mediterranean diet in terms of mass and volume, olives are likely well below other important foods like beans. You're going to eat a lot more beans and greens and tomatoes and fish than you will olives. But olives are a common food item throughout Southern Europe. And scientists at the Goethe University in Frankfurt in Germany believe nutritional components inside the fruit, and by the way, olives are fruits, can prevent or even reverse Alzheimer's and other forms of dementia. And that's what they said. How's it done? Because inside the cell, specifically nerve cells, they focused upon the mitochondria. Mito, M-I-T-O, chondria, C-H-O-N-D-R-I-A. That's the energy factory. That's what causes energy. And that changes early on in Alzheimer's disease. And the most active compounds should then demonstrate in this model they used that it can improve brain function. And so they tested that hypothesis with polyphenols from olives. And indeed, the olives were able to slow down the disease process in the brain, improve mitochondrial dysfunction, and that is solid evidence they protect against Alzheimer's disease. So, this is not the first one to show that olive oil is important, but this is the extra, the added olives themselves. Why not just use olive oil every day in your smoothie, 2 tablespoons in your salad, and in a potato or brown rice, whatever you're cooking, in your soup. That will help you. But also have a cup of olives each day too. Put them in your salad, put them in your pasta. The two together help your brain. And therefore, you're going to be one of those people that as you age, you're going to look in the mirror and say, hey, I still got my abs. I still got my muscle. I still got my mojo. It's working. All right? Another study from Boston University School of Medicine and Tufts Medical Center showed that centurions possess unique immunity that helps them achieve exceptional longevity. There are approximately more or less 30 trillion cells in the human body, more if you're larger, and our health is predicated on them properly interacting with and supporting each other, with the immune system playing a particularly pivotal role. One of the defining characteristics of aging is a decline in the poor functioning of our immune system. Centurions, a rare population of individuals who reach 100 years of age or more, experience delays in aging-related diseases and death, which suggests their immune systems remain functional in extreme old age. This was two different universities, Boston Medical University, or Boston University School of Medicine, and Tufts Medical Center. And they did this study, and they found that if you live to be 100, you harbor distinct immune cells and their activity, and they possess a highly functioning immune system that helps you adapt as you age and avoid a lot of sickness. You know, just something to think about. So why not start now building up your immune system, taking in the probiotics, eating the healthy food, having juices, repairing the damaged cells? From the University of North Carolina comes a study about how yoga helps those experiencing depression, anxiety, and post-traumatic stress disorder. The university found that while there are some promising benefits to using yoga, there isn't yet enough evidence to support the practice as a standalone solution for improving mental health and well-being. But it does make a difference. Now, if you're using vitamin D3, that also helps. More magnesium in the diet, that helps. By getting off sugars and other refined carbohydrates, that helps. And by watching funny movies and things that make you laugh, going to a comedy club, all that helps. So, improve anxiety, depression, post-traumatic, yes. With good support group, begin to laugh at life, don't personalize everything, do some really nice meditative deep breathing, all that together, yeah, then you can overcome depression. Much better than just taking a drug that has never cured anyone of depression. Now, from San Diego State University comes a study about dried fruit, especially plums. Well, a dried plum is a prune. Why? Because it helps prevent bone loss. A daily serving of dried plums can be sufficient enough to ward off bone loss in older women. That's important. So you can put those, you know, if you don't just want to eat them, out of a bag, easy to get, inexpensive. Put them in a smoothie. But get your dried plums every day, and that will help you prevent bone loss. And that's a big deal, because bone loss can also lead to premature death. And finally, self-harm is less likely among young people who use melatonin. This is from the very prestigious Karolinska Institute in Sweden. This was published in the Journal of Child Psychology and Psychiatry. It revealed that you have a lower risk of self-harm among children and teenagers who are prescribed melatonin. That's the hormone produced by the brain and the pineal gland that initiates sleep. And so that's what they did, and it worked. All right? Also helps, by the way, with depression as well. This was done in the Department of Medical Epidemiology and Biostatistics at the Karolinska Institute. Start with 1 milligram and see the results after a month. And then if it doesn't work, go to 2. Well, one last study. This is the Mayo Clinic. If you're doing some high-intensity aerobic training, that can reverse aging processes in the body. But you knew that because I've talked about that about 1,000 times on this program. So during your regular workout, getting your 8,000 to 10,000 steps per day in, make sure that intermittent in that, meaning you do your workout, you get loose, you're feeling good, you're jogging, you're biking, you're powerlifting, whatever you're doing, but then do some intense efforts in there as well for about 4 to 5 minutes of intense work. That really helps your skeletal muscles, and it helps protect your telomeres and helps you live a longer life. So, one more reason, the older you get, the more you need exercise, including some intense exercise. It's good for your heart as well. That's the latest on health and healing. And you can go to Gary Nall YouTube to get our daily program on Classroom on the Air. You can listen to my program live every day, Monday to Friday, on PRN, that's Progressive Radio Network, .live, PRN.live. Noon to 1, and Tuesday evenings for the Progressive Commentary Hour, 7 p.m. And remember, every day at noon Eastern Standard Time, you can tune in to my radio program, getting the latest on health and healing, but also all these other important issues. Tune in to PRN.live, Progressive Radio Network, PRN.live. We're going to take a break and come right back. Please stay with us. I remember that song as I was entering a theater in New Jersey, one of the largest theaters in New Jersey. For me, it was just another night of lecturing. I didn't even know where I was going. I was doing 2 lectures a day, one right after my radio show around 2 o'clock and then one around 7 o'clock in the evening. And boy, was I surprised. I had no idea that it had thousands and thousands of people. And so I saw that we had filled up the stage even, so I didn't even go up on the stage. I went in front of the audience. How many of you were there? Do any of you remember that? And I just looked around. I looked at all these smiling faces, started to talk. I don't know what I was. I was in the zone. 3 hours later, I stopped. It was just a good energy sharing. And if you remember that, over New Jersey about 22, 23 years ago, I'd like to hear what your experiences were, what you learned, if anything, and how you applied what you learned, how that impacted your life. I'm always interested in how people use information. 888-874-4888 is our number. Today we're going to do something a little different, and here's why. For the past 3 years of COVID, and for decades before then, any challenge to whoever was in power, Democrat or Republican, it didn't matter, you were immediately called names, and you were told, stop engaging in conspiracy theories. As a result, no one took you seriously, and not even your friends or family at times. Why was that? Because whoever's in power always controls the narrative. Let me explain how this works in an overview. It's not exact, but it's close enough. We've had 14 years now of Congress being under the control of one party. The White House for most of that, except for four for Trump. But it wouldn't matter who's in power, they still control the narrative. But let's just say that you're a senator or you're a legislator, a representative, and you've come across something that's startling, shocking, something that needs to be told. You have whistleblowers coming to you, let's say from the FBI, the CIA, National Security Agency, and they're telling you stuff that it's bad to the bone. There's a lot of crimes against humanity being done, and it has to be exposed. So you take this information. Do you think you can just go in and call a hearing and it'll happen? Doesn't work that way. First of all, you can't just call a hearing. The only two people who ultimately authorize all hearings in the Senate, the head of the Senate, Chuck Schumer, and in the House, is Nancy Pelosi, and whoever their predecessors were. They then determine, is this good for us or not? Will this make us look bad? Will it impact those in power that we cooperate with? And if it does, then that hearing's not going to happen. Now also they stack the hearings. Who is the head person on that hearing and the chairman of that hearing committee? So as a result, virtually everything that we were told about the war in Ukraine, there was no progenitor that inspired it. It started when it started, and nothing before it was relevant. But we now know that that's not true. We know that Gloria Nuland was the head person, and she's the most powerful neocon woman, along with her husband, in Washington, D.C. And she worked hand in glove with Hillary Clinton. And Clinton, as Secretary of State, did not have the same power she did because she's a part of the permanent neocon establishment, the hegemonic establishment, the power establishment. And what they say goes. You've never seen them brought up on any charges, and you won't, no matter what they engaged in. Nor were you Obama for his genocide in Libya, etc. Because people in power make sure they have stay-behinds, people who, when they leave office, stay behind and protect their reputation. It's the permanent belt class in Washington. They control every agency of government with technocrats. So you have to understand how the game is played. Now, I know this because I was on the radio every single day for 36 years on PFW in Washington, D.C., our sister station, the liberal station down there. And I had a lot of meetings with people. I'd do lectures and premieres and all the time, maybe 10 a year, 12 a year, almost one a month. And people from governmental agencies would come forward afterwards and say, by the way, you know, your criticism of this is actually accurate. It works that way. And this is why we have a government out of control. But nobody knows it. You see, I believe in freedom of choice. I will support you in your freedom of choice, My hope is that you've made the right choice by having the right information. But what happens if you don't get the right information? What if you go to five doctors and all five doctors have the same belief system, so you're getting five doctors with one opinion? That's not freedom of choice. We need differences. We need different voices. We don't have that. And that's the problem, and I'm going to prove that. For example, what if I told you this? Did you know that there is a restricted act? It's called the Restrict Act, being presented. It represents according to Sharon Willems, one of our citizen journalists out there, that expands the government's power and surveillance, reaching virtually every part of your life. And, quote, make no mistake, this piece of legislation is the Patriot Act on steroids. The Restrict Act would seemingly grant the U.S. government total control over all devices connected to the Internet. Your cars, Ring cameras, refrigerators, Alexa devices, and your phone. It goes beyond the pale, with the end goal being nothing short of a complete invasion of your privacy. Outside of this program right now, have you heard of it? Of course not. And you won't. Now, here's another piece of information coming from someone I know who's a close friend. And he's talking about new information that's just come out. And you haven't read about it, and you won't. And you haven't seen it, and you won't. Quote, this is from Steve Brown, one of the foremost liberal humanistic philosophers and activists in American history. He's been an activist for over 60 years. Excuse me. Sorry. I've been pre-recording all morning for about 8 hours. My throat's a little dry. Quote, Gary, as expected, this rather startling news goes unreported by the New York Times, the Washington Post, NBC, CBS, CNN, and MSNBC. It has also been algorithmed into near invisibility on Google, Facebook, YouTube, and WhatsApp app, etc. But bizarrely, although the government has stopped claiming that the vaccines prevent you from catching COVID or spreading it to others, it is still running public service ads urging everyone to, quote, get vaccinated to protect yourself against COVID and prevent you from spreading it to your family and friends, end quote. Radio station WBAI, for example, a supposedly progressive radio station, runs those public service ads multiple times a day, for which it's paid thousands of dollars by the government. That's a separate issue, but he is absolutely correct. You will not find this out. What's he talking about? Do you remember I said as bad as it's been, and I gave you the latest figures last week of how many have died and how many have been injured, how many permanently injured? You're dealing with millions of injured Americans, over 300,000 permanently injured or severely injured, and you're dealing with at least 300,000 dead in the United States. But I said, this is just the beginning. The worst is yet to come. Here's the latest that no one's willing to tell about or do anything about. Quote, from the expose, COVID vaccination takes up to 25 years off of your lifespan, according to the U.S. government's CDC findings. Let me repeat that. Listen carefully. You thought it was 3 years in life expectancy. It was. But the vaccine, quote, COVID vaccination takes up to 25 years off your lifespan. Quote, the long-term consequences of COVID-19 vaccination are now being realized. A year ago, doubly vaccinated Australians were 10.72 times, that's 1,000%, more likely to catch Omicron than the unvaccinated. Now they are 20 times, that's 2,000% more likely, and triply are more than 3,500 times more likely, as the latest NSW official government statistics show. And by the way, I have all the charts. This is not fiction. Meanwhile, the latest Cleveland Clinic data and the latest U.S. data analyzed by Josh Sterling, founder of the Insurance Collaboration to Save Lives and former number one ranked insurance analyst, shows a really, really disturbing trend. Quote, the damage to health caused by each vaccine dose does not lessen over time. It continues indefinitely. Let me repeat that. And this is all from Insurance Actuary and the CDC. This is not made up. The fact that you're not hearing it anywhere or seeing it is because of censorship. I'll get to that in a moment. The damage to health caused by each vaccine dose does not lessen over time. It continues indefinitely. In fact, CDC all-cause mortality data show that each vaccine dose increases death by 7% in the year 2022 compared to the death in 2021. So if you've had 5 doses, then you're 35% more likely to die this year than you were last year. If you had 1 dose, you're 7% more likely to die this year than last year. If you're unvaxxed, no problem, no increase in death. Whoa. So the Cleveland Clinic data that I'm looking at right now, and we're posting for you, why isn't this being exposed? Why is no one willing to have a discussion? Because the people in control know they can control the narrative. That leads me to this. What if you're 30 years old, you thought you were doing the right thing, and so you went ahead and got your vaccinations, and you're a school teacher, and so you got 4 vaccines, 2 immediately within a few months, and then 2 boosters. You could have knocked 25 years off your lifespan. What if you're 50? Then you literally, based upon today's statistics, you'd be at the end of your life biologically. We are going to see, according to these statistics, the largest number of Americans die in American history. And it's all ahead of us, not behind us. So for all of you who championed vaccine apartheid, who used your position to support the government, including members of the WBI board who wrote me hate-filled letters, I support Fauci and you should shut up, etc. I'm not going to say, I told you so. In fact, I'll be there to help you if you want help trying to undo the damage to the vaccines. I do not believe in being right where other people have learned no lesson from being wrong. But for all of you who listened and followed the science, the real science, and remember, I am a real scientist. I will compare my scientific background in my field with anyone else in America. From my clinical studies and peer-reviewed journals and 36 years working in a laboratory and being the youngest senior research fellow ever selected in the Institute's history, no. You're not going to get away with saying, well, maybe I don't know the material. That doesn't fly. You don't know the material. If you're saying, don't question the government, you got to do it. And if you don't, then somehow you're un-American. You're a threat to society. Remember Don Lemon, that fool? And there's a lot just like him. So do you take responsibility? Listen carefully, especially Pacifica members and local board. Do you now take responsibility for the people you encouraged to get vaccinated, with all the evidence we have now that it was never needed, it's causing death, and it's going to cause a massive amount of permanent disability. And we have the records of all those because we interviewed those people. You never saw any of these people interviewed once on any of the mainstream media. They didn't want to show you the victims. They hid it, and they could hide it because Congress would not allow hearings on it. So how many other things have been wrong about? This is a big one, because you're talking about lives lost. So how did this happen? It happens because the House and the Senate do not allow hearings, except what they want. So you get a January 6th panel. That wasn't an insurrection. That was a bunch of idiots. I mean, and some stupid people who deserved to be arrested for causing damage. But the President of the United States said 5 officers were killed. None were killed. If they were, show us the autopsy. Show us who they were. None were killed. Everything was a lie, but they controlled everything. And the hearings, they control that. And who don't they allow in? Anyone who could challenge them. So this is the kangaroo court we're living in. So I'm going to do this starting right now. We're going to go right through the end of the show on this. If you want to call in near the end, you're welcome to. Here is actual hearings with opposition who are allowing another side of a story to be told. The first person you're going to hear from, and all of these are under oath at congressional hearings. So if they lie and they're caught lying, that's perjury. And I've got 60 of these because I've spent the last several months watching congressional testimony, something that you never see unless one of your political parties wants to, you know, beat their chest and say, see, we gotcha. Listen carefully what they're talking about. This is about no witness check. This is a assistant attorney general from Louisiana. He's a Rhodes Scholar. He's a Harvard Law Review. He's got all the credentials. But most importantly, he's telling you the truth. Let's hear what he has to say.
Mr. Chairman, Ranking Member Plaskett, members of the subcommittee, imagine a world where White House officials email the New York Times editorial board when the paper runs a story criticizing the president. They abuse the paper in profane language and demand that it immediately pull the offending story from its website, while the White House publicly threatens devastating legal consequences if the paper doesn't comply, and it does. Imagine a world where the FBI every month sends all the major booksellers in the United States an encrypted list of the books that the FBI wants them to pull from their shelves that month and burn, and the booksellers comply by burning at least half of those books. Imagine a world where a federal national security agency teams up with a major research university to establish a mass surveillance program of ordinary Americans' political thoughts and opinions. They use swarms of analysts and cutting-edge technology to monitor hundreds of millions of domestic political communications in real time and covertly censor millions of them. These three scenarios do not come from a hypothetical dystopian future. The first two are very similar to what federal officials are doing with social media platforms now. And the third scenario is not hypothetical at all. That mass surveillance and mass censorship program started operating in 2020. Last July, the plaintiffs in Louisiana and Missouri against Biden received a limited discovery of communications about censorship between federal officials and social media platforms. What we obtained was astonishing, staggering, and horrifying. A veritable army of federal officials pressures, threatens, coerces, colludes with, demands, and deceives social media platforms to censor online speech. Our evidence shows White House officials badgering social media platforms in private to censor speech that contradicts the White House's preferred narratives, while the president publicly accuses them of, quote, killing people by not censoring enough of ordinary American speech. And the president's spokespeople raise the specter of crippling legal consequences if they don't comply. One major platform responds to White House demands by assuring them, we hear your call to do more, and it scrambles to carry out, quote, what the White House expects from us on misinformation going forward. Our evidence shows federal officials routinely flagging social media posts by ordinary Americans for censorship. It shows federal officials orchestrating elaborate plots of deception to dupe platforms into censoring disfavored speech. It shows federal officials engaging in seemingly endless meetings with the content moderation officers of major platforms to discuss disinformation and censorship. It shows federal officials serving as privileged fact checkers with effective authority to dictate what Americans can and cannot say on matters of immense public importance on social media. And it shows federal officials relentlessly pressuring social media platforms by threatening them with ruinous legal consequences if they do not cave to the federal demands for censorship. Truth is not the goal of this federal censorship enterprise. The censors have been proven wrong again and again, including on politically seismic issues. But each time the censors are proven wrong, the censorship has continued unabated, and it expands. And that is because now, as at every other time in human history, the goal of censorship is not to promote truth. It's to obtain, preserve, and expand political power.
Mm-hmm.
Censorship is not necessary to protect Americans' lives, security, or democracy. Systematically violating the most basic civil right of millions of Americans does not make Americans safer or healthier. Federal censorship is not democratic. It stifles the voices of ordinary Americans and places the channels of public debate under the command and control of elites. Censorship inflicts lasting harm on Americans by impeding the pursuit of truth in a free marketplace of ideas. The Supreme Court describes social media as the modern public square. For years, federal officials have been perpetrating a hostile takeover of that modern public square, and this hostile takeover has largely succeeded. Congress should take swift action to banish the federal censors and restore the freedom of speech to social media. I welcome the subcommittee's questions.
Okay. Everything he said is factual. And yet you would not have known any of that. You have been called a conspiracy nut. You'd been called a right-wing fascist or a racist, whatever the term is. They're using everything they can. They're just throwing anything and everything if you opposed anything that the establishment says in any area. So now we're seeing the truth, and yet they will continue to lie. They are who they are. Why would you continue to believe them when they've lied so many times on so many important issues? Here's the next one. Excuse me. This is a Dan Bishop grills a Stanford professor on free speech threats. Remember, you heard what he was saying. The White House directly was putting pressure with threats, and we have all the tweets. We have proof of it. You take that person off. You do not allow that person to ever again be on your program, but you allow tweets that attack that person or their organization, you don't interfere with them. Telling exactly what Facebook, Twitter, Google, Wikipedia in particular, and all this is going to come back with lawsuits. I already have over 100 people been libeled on Wikipedia. We're waiting for Congress to take away the 230 Protection Act and watch the lawsuits pour in. So they've gotten away with it because they've had the right partners. Now they don't. Now there's a challenge. Here's your second insight under oath in Congress, but hearings you have never had in the last 14 years.
I'm shocked I have to explain to a law professor that there's an obvious difference between engaging in the legislative process that is open and transparent and subject to our constitutional system, rather than having some skeevy White House staffers trying to threaten social media companies under the auspices of some sort of allowed content moderation. I yield back to the gentleman from North Carolina.
I thank the gentleman. Mr. Sauer, Mr. Seligman's testimony asserts that the federal government didn't threaten or coerce the social media platform. Says the Attorney General's complaint that you're litigating in federal court lacks a reasonable legal and factual basis. They didn't mention, as I understand it, just last week, the United States District Judge in that case denied the administration's motions to dismiss. Doesn't that denial mean the opposite of what Mr. Seligman testified? Turn on your mic. Is your mic on?
Our federal district judge came to the opposite conclusion.
Yeah. So, I mean, that conclusion is that the complaint plausibly alleges, but it gives plausible factual allegations in support of a legally sufficient legal theory that this censorship scheme, in fact, violates First Amendment. Can you summarize some of the allegations of fact concerning coercion and threats that you tendered to the court to lead to that conclusion?
Yes, and I'd preface that by saying, in fact, there's more than one way you can violate the First Amendment. There's coercion, there's joint participation, there's conspiracy, there is deception, there is pervasive entwinement, and there is significant encouragement. So even if we hadn't alleged threats, it would in no way undermine our claim that there's a First Amendment violation. But there's overwhelming evidence of threats. And if I may, I can summarize some of those.
So, give you a little bit of time on that, yeah.
Obviously, one of the things we've alleged is that the threats about antitrust liability and Section 230 repeal or replacement, those on one side are tied to demands for greater censorship. It's one thing for a federal official to say we should repeal or replace Section 230 immunity. It's quite otherwise for them to say, you'd better censor private American speech on social media or we will take that action against you.
Right.
It's the threat linked to the demand, which is what violates the First Amendment. And the case law is abundantly clear on this, and the evidence of that is overwhelming. But that's not all. We have all kinds of other threats. For example, in the Elvis Chan deposition, it was revealed that congressional staffers had been flying out to Silicon Valley to privately meet with the social media platforms since 2017, bringing proposed legislation with them to threaten them with adverse legal counsels if censorship didn't improve. And what Mr. Chan, the government's FBI agent, testified is that this was effective. They experienced the pressure. It made a huge difference. It's censored.
How many FBI agents did Twitter say interacted with Twitter?
I can't remember off the top of my
Numbers
head.
Numbers in the 80s, isn't it? 80-something?
Certainly the Foreign Influence Task Force includes about 78 to 80 agents, I believe. And then there's another 8 in San Francisco office alone that are involved in these activities. So many.
I know your written testimony contains hundreds of pages of these allegations. So that's interesting. Mr. Seligman, you referred to yourself as a professor. Now, you're a fellow at the Constitutional Law Center at Stanford Law School. Isn't that right?
That is correct.
And you're not on the faculty at Stanford Law School.
That's right. And I didn't claim otherwise.
Okay. You graduated from law school in 2011. Your LinkedIn resume suggests you haven't had any job longer than about 3.5 years since then. I looked on Lexis. I couldn't find any case in which you've served as counsel of record in which you finally prevailed. Can you name one?
I've worked on legal teams that have prevailed at every level of the federal judiciary, including the Supreme Court.
Can you name a case?
States. Yeah, sure. So Tyson v. Buafekio, which is a case at the Supreme Court.
Tyson versus what?
Buafekio was a case. It was a case about Rule 23 class certification.
Okay.
He prevailed.
Okay. What reason is it? So you're not a professor. Do you claim expertise in the First Amendment? Do you claim to be a First Amendment expert?
I am an expert in constitutional law, including the First Amendment. Yes.
Interestingly enough, on your website, on the Stanford website, says you're an expert in election law, but you also have broad research interest in constitutional law. It doesn't even mention the First Amendment.
As many legal scholars do, I have a diverse set of interests.
Mr. Sauer, wouldn't it be squarely in conflict with the First Amendment to censor Mr. Seligman's opinion just because it conflicts with the official narrative as represented by the district court judge's opinion?
Absolutely. The First Amendment protects everybody.
Can you take in the last few seconds I've got and talk briefly about how the Election Integrity Project and the Virality Project have moved to censoring whole narratives?
Yes, there's. I see that time is almost up, but there is a concerted effort that we see in the evidence to censor narrative at a narrative level, where a narrative can contain hundreds of thousands of social media posts, and that is operated out of Stanford University.
Thank you, sir. Time's expired. Gentleman from Texas, Mr. Allred, recognized for 5 minutes.
Okay. Once again, you have a constitutional attorney showing that dozens and dozens of FBI agents, that's only one agency, there were many, were going out on a regular basis without anyone's knowledge except those who told them to do that. And you don't have a regular FBI agent deciding on their own, come on, fellas, let's go out and put some pressure upon Google to make sure that the people who are challenging us, Robert Kennedy Jr. or anyone else, that they don't have a platform. And by the way, let's see if we can find some dirt on them. That's exactly what happened. And no one knew. Why? Because none of the committees were willing to have those hearings. And we're showing you the hearings now that they have been allowed. We're going to jump down to one more before I take some calls here. Right now in the United States, are you aware that there was a family, Catholics, and they were praying outside of, the husband was praying outside of an anti-abortion clinic, but not restricting people, not making a scene, just praying. And he was arrested. But the local and this is a liberal attorney, district attorney, refused to bring charges. Then they tried to bring a suit and it was dismissed. Suddenly the FBI comes in and notifies he's in under investigation. So he calls and says, I'm willing to, you know, cooperate. If there's a problem, I'll turn myself in. Instead, they have upwards of 40 armed people batter down his door, go in, hold, shoot and mind you, these people would shoot to kill. And they were pointing their guns at his children. Now, there's a picture, if you're watching this, there's a picture of his family. I think it's all but all young girls except one boy and his wife. Now, they could have just said, come in. But instead, no. This was all political. And then we hear something that not even the attorney general or the head of the FBI was aware of. So they say that there's a directive to infiltrate all Catholic parishes in the United States, all Catholic churches, for possible traditional Catholics now being viewed as domestic terrorists. Wow. How's that happen? How does just being a Catholic suddenly they've weaponized your religion? And that's happening. You wouldn't know that except for someone who challenged him, Josh Hawley. So we're going to go to, we're going to skip one here, and we're going to go to number four. You made the FBI political. Josh Hawley unleashes challenge to Merrick Garland for his attack on parents, peaceful, unarmed parents, not breaking any laws. In fact, they weren't arrested after everything was done with, and then they came in to go after him. This is how bad it is today. And you wouldn't have known this if you weren't listening right now.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Attorney General Garland, let me just ask you, does your department have a problem with anti-Catholic bias?
Our department protects all religions and all ideologies. It does not have any bias against any religion of any kind.
Well, you could have surprised me, because given the resources that you are expending and the apparently intelligence assets that you are deploying against Catholics, it appears, and other people of faith, while simultaneously turning a blind eye while people are executed gang style in the streets of our cities, including in my home state, your answer frankly surprises me. Let's talk about the Mark Haupt case, for example. You've been asked about this already today, and frankly, your answers really astound me. This is a case where a Catholic pro-life demonstrator, father, was accused of disorderly conduct in front of an abortion center. The local prosecutor, the Philadelphia district attorney, who is a Democrat, a liberal, very progressive, declined to prosecute. There was a private suit that got dismissed. And then after all of that, your Justice Department sent between 20 and 30 armed agents in the early morning hours to the Houck's private residence to arrest this guy after he had offered to turn himself in voluntarily. Here's the photo. Once again, you can see the long guns. You can see the ballistic shields. You can see that they're wearing bulletproof vests. Why did the Justice Department do this? Why did you send 20 to 30 SWAT-style agents and a SWAT-style team to this guy's house when everybody else had declined to prosecute and he'd offered to turn himself in?
Determinations of how to make arrests under arrest warrants are made based by the tactical operators in the district. They are not.
But you surely looked into it by this point, right? You know the answer. Surely.
All I know is what the FBI has said, which is that they made decisions on the ground as to what was safest and easiest.
So
you do not agree with your description of what happened on the scene.
You don't agree with my description. I'm pointing out what the photo is. There are agents here who have long guns and ballistic shields. Let's take a look at the hardened criminals that your Justice Department sent these armed agents to go terrorize on that morning. Here they are. Here they are at mass. Here's the seven children with Mr. Houck and his wife. In this early morning, they were all at home. Mrs. Houck has said repeatedly, the children were screaming, they feared for their lives. You got these agents demanding that he come out. They've got the guns, she said, pointing at the house and at them. He has offered to turn himself in. And this is who you go to terrorize. What's really interesting to me is this seems to directly contradict your own memorandum about the use of force at the Justice Department. You say officers may use only the force that is objectively reasonable to effectively control an incident. Are you telling me that in your opinion as Attorney General, it was objectively necessary to use 20 or 30 SWAT-style agents with long guns and ballistic shields for these people?
What I'm saying is that decisions about how to go about this were made on the ground by FBI agents.
So you're saying you don't know?
I'm saying what I just said.
Which is that you're abdicating responsibility?
I'm not abdicating responsibility.
Then give me the answer. Do you think, in your opinion, you are the Attorney General of the United States, you are in charge of the Justice Department, and yes, sir, you are responsible. So give me an answer.
The FBI does not agree with your description.
I'm not asking about the FBI. You are the Attorney General. Give me your answer. Do you think that it was objectively reasonable and they followed your guidelines in sending 20 to 30 armed agents to terrorize these people? Yes or no?
The facts I have, which are those presented by the FBI, are not consistent with your description.
So you think it was reasonable?
I'm saying the facts are not as you describe.
What, that the children weren't there? That there weren't long guns there? That there weren't agents? What do you dispute? What's the factual premise you dispute?
FBI,
be specific.
FBI said they don't agree with your description of...
Be specific. They don't agree with what?
Of how many agents, of the agents who were there, and of what their roles were. They don't agree.
Do you know the jury in this case acquitted Mr. Houck, as I'm sure you're aware. Do you know how long it took him?
I am aware, and we respect the decision of the jury.
Do you know how long it took him?
I don't know.
1 hour. 1 hour. Philadelphia District Attorney declines to prosecute. The private suit's dismissed. You use an unbelievable show of force with guns that I just note liberals usually decry. We're supposed to hate long guns and assault-style weapons. You're happy to deploy them against Catholics and innocent children. Happy to. And then you haul him into court and a jury acquits him in 1 hour. I just suggest to you that that is a disgraceful performance by your Justice Department and a disgraceful use of resources. I notice a pattern, though. The FBI field office in Richmond, on the 23rd of January of this year, issued a memorandum in which they advocated for, and I quote, the exploration of new avenues for tripwire and source development against traditionalist Catholics, it's their language, including those who favor the Latin Mass. Attorney General, are you cultivating sources and spies in Latin Mass parishes and other Catholic parishes around the country?
No, the Justice Department does not do that. It does not do investigations based on religion. I saw the document you have.
What did you do about it?
It's appalling. It's appalling. I'm in complete agreement with you. I understand that the FBI has withdrawn it, and it's now looking into how this could ever have happened.
How did it happen?
So, you suddenly want to take Catholics who want their Mass done in Latin, and you want to put infiltrators in there. For what reason? Because they're domestic terrorists. So now you're backtracking on it because this got out to the public. How did it get out to the public? These hearings. I see. So would you have known any of this was happening? You know, there are a lot of Catholics in America. Think well about the political support you give them. By the way, there's just been nothing but a jubilee of high fives and didn't we do great by indicting Donald Trump. Foolish, foolish people. You keep saying that the only people who would vote for Trump would be a bunch of idiot, racist, redneck, white supremacists. I know a lot of people who are going to vote for Trump who've told me so, who have spent their whole life as Democrats and liberals. They don't like Trump. One guy even told me yesterday he hates Trump, but he hates what this administration has done more than he hates Trump. You're just so clueless. None of this should have happened because you know what's going to happen. It's going to be happening to everyone now. Look at what you opened up with this unprecedented political process. Wow. None of this deals with the real problems in our lives. Except now we know a real problem is, who do we trust? Who do we believe? Your turn. Give us a call, 888-874-4888. We got to say goodbye to the BBI audience, but we'll continue at the top of the hour. But we also have two people on who want to give some feedback about what they've experienced at our health and nutrition retreats. We have Lindsay Floyd on, and we have Bruce. Lindsay, your turn. Tell us what you experienced that made your experience at the retreat down at the villa important.
Hello, Gary. How are you?
Good.
What I experienced, I just love first the environment you set up there with all the rose gardens, the gardens, the trees, the pine trees, everything. It's just such a beautiful environment with the animals running around, the chickens, guinea hens, the peacocks, you know, just all over the place. It's just such a serene environment. What I experienced was just being able to really relax, breathe in some truly fresh air without all the pollutants, thanks to all of the forestry around. The food was outstanding. I just, you know, felt just so at home, I guess, for lack of a better expression, in the wonderful environment with the wonderful food. The vegan chef was outstanding. It was just such a, you know, heartwarming, relaxing, and effervescent, energizing time.
Oh, good. Well, your presence contributed to that, so thank you for being there. We look forward to seeing you again. Bruce, now, Bruce, you were there for our anti-aging study. What did you experience that allowed you to understand how you can slow down and reverse the aging process?
Well, first of all, Gary, thanks for all you do. I've been an active listener of yours for over 50 years. You've been a positive influence in my life. So I was at your second anti-aging study from March to May 2020. So that was the start of COVID. And so it was a 2-month on-campus program, which included several modalities and approaches, you know, fasting, intermittent fasting, exercise, stress management, deep breathing, a plant-based vegan diet, supplementation, juices and smoothies, natural environment, journaling, and a lot of motivating lectures. And all of that really, I think, had a major impact. So my impressions were that this is a very rigorous program. It required discipline, focus, and really understanding what was at stake, because in essence, we were the guinea pigs. And so this cohort was really convened to confirm the first cohort that you had, that people could actually de-age with the right protocols, with the right approach. So essentially, it was a proof of concept. And we did blood tests, impedance testing, all different types of exercises, and your wonderful staff was monitoring and observing us throughout this whole process, a 2-month process. So what are some of the results? Basically, my blood pressure lowered by 30 points. My weight, I lost 25 pounds. I had a much better blood lipid profile after the 2 months. My percentage of body fat went from 15% to 5%, which is really off the charts. For example, the heavy ropes, I went from 45 seconds initially to over 65 minutes at the end of the 2 months. And I also felt my mind was a lot clearer, and I had a lot stronger resolve to do things in my life, like I had to move out of New York City. So to summarize, the takeaways is I thought this study was very successful. It was it really proved that the synergistic interactions of a lot of positive inputs can really have a tremendous impact to reverse the aging process. And I think you're on the verge of creating a new paradigm for people getting older, but growing older in a healthy way. And the only thing I'd mention, which is what you're doing now anyhow, is to have ongoing support and follow-up for all your cohorts. So overall, Gary, it was a wonderful program. I'm glad I went through it, and I thank you and your wonderful staff.
Bruce, you should come back and do it because, again, this time we're only 2 weeks on campus, but the good news is I was just informed over the weekend that one of the protocol sponsors, the one that created the supplements we must take based upon the peer-reviewed literature for aging, and the blood workups. We must get the 58 different measurements in our blood that are objective, that really show positive effects. They agreed, at least up to this point, to subsidize 100% the blood workups, and now it's three blood workups and the supplements. So that's going to save around somewhere around more or less $1,600, $1,700. I'm going to get those figures a little later today. And as long as they keep their word, that's a huge savings. More importantly, yesterday I got a call from Dr. Klatz, and he's coming there to observe on campus. He said, we have sponsored a lot of studies at the World Congress on Anti-Aging Medicine. We have 52,000 scientists as members actively now, and no study that we can recommend is as complete or detailed as this one has been. And with each one of the previous five, the last had the methylation DNA test to determining how actually long our lifespan is in every cell of our body, including our organs. He said, this broke scientific history. Do it one more time, and you set a new paradigm. So we're going to do it this time. I'm doing more protocols than before, and we have monitoring on campus of everything. And all the lectures for the anti-aging group will be in the theater so they can be streamed to these thousands of scientists around the world who are watching this to see what we're doing that they haven't. And also, I've been invited to attend the largest anti-aging scientific conference in the world coming up in another couple months. So hopefully we'll have good results. So now we have even more knowledge. I have a whole new breakthrough concept I'm going to be sharing each day about what causes us not to do what's in our best interest, including keeping ourselves healthy. We're also going to be premiering a brand new DNA clock that I've created, all based upon scientific literature. By the end of that lecture, which will be 2 hours long, people will understand, if they just write notes from it, and starting with an average, how long they should live based upon the choices they've made. But more importantly, how much longer they could live in good, outstanding health if they made the changes. But we don't have this knowledge in the general population, not even the anti-aging population. So we are at the breakthrough moment in scientific history. And we believe that since we've now proven scientifically, not us, an outside major university's anti-aging division with that methylation DNA test, that we added an average of 2.2 years onto people's lives. One person was 5 years. Now, if we don't have the comorbidities, we believe, and we were told by one of the scientists that attended when it's on this call, you should have averaged 5 years additional life onto someone. Now, think of that. It's a 90-day study, 2 weeks on campus, but 90% of the work is in that 2 weeks on campus. Could you imagine telling someone 2 weeks on campus could add years onto your life, healthy years, and reverse disease? But that's what this is about. So hopefully we'll see some of the people who've attended the early ones, because now we have much more science. We have a lot more cooperation, and even financial cooperation, which we haven't had a penny in the past. All those differences I've made up out of my own pocket, but this time hopefully we'll have people contributing, the scientists in that anti-aging foundation. So people are interested in being a part of either the health support group that Lindsay was talking about, where you come and you just enjoy yourself and you detoxify and come to all the lectures in the Socrates Gardens and do the meditation, the butterfly hut, and all the wonderful things all day long we do. That's going to be held at the same time, but completely different protocols. For either one, if you want to come, you'll call Luann. She's screening everyone to make sure it's right for you. 903-881-7008. 903-881-7008. Look forward to seeing you there. If you decide that you're up for even doing more, Bruce and Lindsay, the same. We're out of time, everyone. Thank you all for listening, and have a nice day.